Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me on this first of a series of very special podcast episodes, it's Kelly. Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me.
I am more than thrilled to have you here. As longtime listeners of our podcast might recall, and that's like maybe two of you, I don't know, Kelly was on our podcast. Wow, we got to go back to, I think, February of 2015.
Oh my God, no way.
Yeah.
That's been a while.
Right. It was when Dan and I decided that leading up to the final seven episodes of Mad Men that were going to air in April that year, we decided, because we started our podcast the previous year with the first half of that final season, so we had never really gotten the chance to talk about any of the preceding Mad Men season. So it was like, hey, let's be crazy. Let's do a gigantic binge of all the episodes and then do, you know, a podcast for season one, then one for season two, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. You, I believe, joined us for the season two conversation.
Okay.
So that was the last time. I think I was on the podcast that you co-host, the Geek Girl Soup podcast, a very fine podcast, I might add.
Thank you.
And you know, anyone who hates our podcast, blame them. Because if they hadn't let me on their podcast way back when, I probably never would have agreed to do this podcast with Dan several months later. I would have been like, why would I want to do that? Who wants to hear me other than me? I think I either appeared, the last time I appeared on your guys' podcast was either the early fall of either 2016 or 2017. I'm not sure which year it was.
I don't remember. I don't listen to my own podcast.
I remember when I used to listen to our own podcast. and then I think just to make sure I wouldn't do that, like, I know subconsciously we'll record for two and a half hours. You'll never want to have to sit through that again. So,
oh Lord.
I generally listen to I usually listen to like the first 10 minutes and the last 10 minutes or something like that, just to make sure, you know, everything came, you know, it started off okay. The edits were fine. And then everything else, I might skim through it occasionally, but I'm like, I was just here. I don't, you know, I don't need to listen to it over again, you know, unless it's something I'm exceptionally proud of. And, that generally doesn't happen. I kid.
Or, you know, something particularly funny, I guess, but
that has happened. It's usually someone else making the jokes, but that's very true.
Yeah.
So, I don't think I have yet said what this podcast is, even though y'all who've clicked on it, you already know because it's in the title. This is the first of a series. You could call it a countdown, I guess, because it is taking on a countdown-like format. I have very humbly titled it, the top 20 greatest TV drama episodes of all time.
Which is perfect for your podcast. Yeah. I mean, the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You have to have this list.
It's in the damn title.
Exactly.
There might have been a time, I could be wrong, but I think a few years back when Dan and I were doing one of the best of end of year podcast. I don't remember which year it was. Might have been 2017 or 2018. Whatever year we didn't skip, I don't remember. But we were trying to come up before we were, you know, like a week or two before we were recording, we were trying to come up with other different categories to throw in there other than just like the best and the worst or the biggest surprise, whatever. I could be wrong. But I'm going to give him credit, even though I still don't know for sure if he's going to appear on this podcast. I think he will, because I think he'll get very upset if there's a couple shows I think he'd be upset if he didn't get to participate on. So I'm pretty sure he'll be here a few times. But I believe one of his ideas was for the year was to pick out the best TV drama episodes, just specific episodes. And I believe I said, nah, I don't want to do that. No, yeah. I think I was like, how many categories are we going to have? We already have how long is this podcast going to be? It'll be, no one wants to hear a 3-hour podcast. And then we end up doing a 3-hour podcast.
Oh gosh.
So getting to the whole idea, the top 20 greatest TV drama episodes, I just want to make it clear from the get-go, because I've dealt with things that involve lists and countdowns and all those sort of things. I do not expect everyone to agree with all the selections. In fact, I bet some folks might not agree with any of them. But you know what? Let's face it. I think that's the nature of all lists, all countdowns, all award shows, all those kind of things. I mean, I think I can even speak for both of us on this one, because I remember when we used to chat back in the day, we were both avid readers of Entertainment Weekly, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we'd look forward to the fall TV preview issue or the movie preview issue. And I think we also probably look forward to the year-end issue of things like Entertainment Weekly. And like Rolling Stone would do this too, and a few other magazines as well. They would do their top 10 series of the year, and they do whatever. Always would look forward to that.
Yeah.
Now, did I typically agree with most of their choices? No. Yeah. So, again, I expect there to be the occasional discussion or more likely debate on the weekly Facebook post for these things. I don't mind. That's cool. You know, attack it if you wish. I just won't comment, or as I've been saying to people over the last week, hey, you know what? You can go get your own podcast, then you can do your own list.
Right.
I'm kind of a dick about things when it comes.
Yeah.
In fact, I said it to one of the usual co-hosts who contacted me the other day with, oh, I would have included blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, you know, when you get your podcast, then you can include that, because I'm not. Now, but I think one question that might be on some people's minds are, well, how are these episodes chosen? Because they might just assume I just came up with it myself. And although that would be tempting, that's not the case. I actually pulled together lists from various publications, such as the aforementioned Entertainment Weekly, by the way, websites that are both U.S. Based and U.K. based, because they love doing lists in the U.K. I noticed that. Oh, they're all about it. You just got to weed out all the British stuff, because, you know, we don't want British stuff here. Anyway, just kidding.
So all of these are U.S. dramas?
I don't have the list in front of me, but I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure they are.
Yeah.
There's a few other anomalies I noticed about the list that I find interesting, but I'm trying hard not to give too much away, because I just want folks to hear what the current one is. And at the end of the podcast, you'll hear what the next one's going to be. Yeah. So I don't want people to start knowing what the top 10 or 20 is going to be.
Yeah.
All I can say, will there be a few you expect to be there that will be there? Yeah, they probably will be. Will there be a few you expect to be there that won't be there? Yeah, probably that too. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I looked at those sites. I looked at, and there's even just sites that are just based on just ranking episodes. You know, everything from, obviously, IMDb does that to a certain extent. Ranker.com does that. Put that all together. I was doing hash marks with certain episodes, noticing, oh, that one's a really popular one. I hadn't even thought of that one. I did everything I could to not let my own personal bias impact any selection. And the irony is, the one time I sort of kind of did, I eventually reversed that decision. And that's actually the case with the episode we're going to be talking about tonight. Mm-hmm. I'll talk about that a little bit later in the podcast, but I just think that's funny. I just said this whole big thing. It's like, oh yeah, the exception is what we're talking about now.
Right.
So let's get to the chase here. So first of all, coming in at number 20 on the greatest TV drama episode of all time, it's going to be an episode of House's Head, the 15th episode of season 4. Because I'm assuming for most folks like myself and Kelly as well, I think, probably haven't watched House in a while.
It had been a while, but for the past few days, I binged and I got through half of season four and then jumped ahead and watched House's Head and then Wilson's Heart.
So that, knowing that, that means you almost watched half the entire series.
I did, yeah.
In fact, technically, maybe you might have actually watched more so, because I think in later seasons they reduced the number of episodes, as opposed to the first few seasons where they, I think they did go up to like 19 or 20 or 20, I forget how many.
22, at season three was 24.
The old network standards of the 22 to 24 episode seasons. Yeah. I remember those.
Exactly.
Days. So, you know.
I was committed. I committed to this.
I'll be honest. My intention going into this was I was going to watch this specific episode and I was going to watch the subsequent episode because they're essentially a two-parter. So you kind of have to watch, you know, the next one, which is Wilson's Heart. If you're going to watch House's Head, it would be strange not to.
Yeah.
And then I essentially picked random episodes, or I should say semi-random episodes from different seasons. And a lot of that came from, as I said, I was going through all those different articles and blah, blah, blah. I would notice what other episodes got mentioned a lot. Because I'm a fan of the show, but I'm not a fan the way I am, say, of, you know, say like Breaking Bad or Mad Men, where I know them by title.
Yeah.
You know? One or two I recognized. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that one. Yeah. So I wanted to get a full feel for the show. And I did. And I eventually watched. It was funny. The last episode I watched was the first episode. Mm. I ended with the very first episode of House.
Oh, wow.
But I think if I put them all together, I think I ended up watching 10, 9 or 10. Okay. I think I had 9 and I felt, it seems weird to watch 9 episodes. I should watch 10. So I watched 10. So the overall series, just to give a little, you know, little nutshell history here. House, it ran on the Fox network for 8 seasons, like we were just talking about. Ran from like 2004 to 2012, and it piled up. Now, IMDb has it as 176 episodes. That's not quite accurate because they kind of, for example, there's another great two-parter that aired the same night, but it's 2 episodes. It's clearly 2 episodes, and they list it as 1. Although when you look at it, other places, it's, you know, it's called Broken Part 1 and Broken Part 2. And so it's like, well, it's really more. It's at least 177 episodes. I don't know if there's another two-parter hidden in there somewhere, maybe. But, you know, it's in that ballpark. The main people that were behind the series, you had Paul Attanasio, who was a name I actually knew before House because he penned some really fantastic screenplays back in the 90s. I mean, he's behind Quiz Show. Quiz Show is an excellent script. And Donnie Brasco, aka one of the only Al Pacino movies in the last 30 years where he doesn't annoy me. So, and the other name that's even more often associated with the series is David Shore. You know, he's typically listed as a creator. And, you know, he's gone on to create other well-received TV series such as, you know, Sneaky Pete, yay! And The Good Doctor, which I have not seen, but I know what it's about, which makes me not want to see it. So there you go.
Oh, Lord.
So,
can I mention someone else who was associated with the first 3 seasons?
Be my guest.
People. As executive producer, Daniel Sackheim.
Right.
Yeah, he kept jumping out at me because of his directing credits. So most recently, 2 episodes of Lovecraft Country. Servant on Apple TV Plus, True Detective, 4 episodes. I'm looking at IMDb right now. Better Call Saul, Ozark, and my favorite, The Leftovers.
Oh, yes.
And Game of Thrones. Yes. And The Americans. Sorry. Yeah. Also a big favorite.
Could love Game of Thrones. I'm kidding. I kid.
So much. And then season 4, boom, his name wasn't there anymore.
Interesting. He had moved on to spend more time on one of those other projects. Obviously, he's not just a TV veteran. He works on the cream of the crop there. So
yeah,
it's not like you try to like, oh, so we worked on, you know, you know, the blah 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 procedural, and the one, you know, eight different. Oh, the first drag racing in the block. Anyway, I leave the windows open. You know, we it's the sound of the city that we bring to the heartland here.
Yeah.
So glad you mentioned him, because that's especially when you look at all those shows, all those great shows, none of which made the list. No, I'm kidding. I'm one of a couple.
Yeah.
Not that many. So the show. We all know what the concept and the story is of the show. You know, as House himself would say, it's a story about a lonely, misanthropic drug addict who essentially, and quite deliberately, is the Sherlock Holmes of diagnostics. Because they hit the Sherlock Holmes thing pretty hard on this show, I've always thought.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming people who are fans of the show, they already know all this, but it's very clear, you know, he's... You know, like, Wilson is the Watson to his Holmes. His address is actually, you know, 221 Baker Street, which is like the address of Sherlock Holmes. You know, it's, you know, everything, you know, Holmes is an addict. House is an addict. Holmes always thought he was the smartest guy in the room and kind of was not exactly, you know, the sociable type, shall we say. You can say that about House as well, which is probably why I relate to him so much.
Now, have you figured out an anagram for your name, though? Because season 3, episode 20, he says that an anagram for his name is Huge Ego Sorry.
I believe I once did something like that with my name, and I believe it was something that I don't want to say on this podcast. So I'll just leave it at that. And people are like, it's an explicit podcast. You've said plenty of dirty stuff. I was like, oh, no, it's more makes me look bad.
Oh, boy.
So anyway, no, it's just funny. And also, speaking of just us both recently watching it, as people listen to, I guess I mentioned it on the Fargo podcast. I don't know if I mentioned it on the boys. I recently had foot surgery, so I'm kind of hobbled and gimping around the house. And I'm watching this show about a guy who's pretty much hobbled and gimping around all the time. And he thinks he's the smartest guy, and he pisses everybody off. I'm like, wow, I kind of relate to this. You know, it's interesting. just a little bit, you know. I've got more of a beard going, but there we go.
Oh.
I'm trying to think where we are. So... The one other thing I wanted to mention, and you know, it's interesting. Maybe it's just like an era thing. Because again, when did the show start? It was like 2004. It started, right? Okay. So especially during the first several years of this of the 21st century, it seems like there was this very popular trope of the socially dysfunctional or awkward main character who's still at least a couple steps ahead of everybody else. And if you think about it, there are a number of shows, you know, you could say they were procedural or semi-procedural shows that were like, that were of that ilk. You know, and the ones that really surpassed the rather rote and bland formula ones were the ones that really took the time to craft the characters well. Mm-hmm. And so even if the shows weren't technically serialized dramas, they still had enough ongoing story threads that still had a serialized appeal, more or less. House obviously would be one of those. Some were lighter in touch, like a show like Monk, for example. Mm-hmm. Very much in the similar vein. Very Sherlock Holmesian as well. Psych is a little bit like that. Bones is another show like that. You know, or I'll pick one that I know that you might be dear to your heart and go in the opposite direction of tone. Look at a show like Luther is kind of in that vein to a certain extent. And heck, you can go back several decades and go right to Columbo, frankly.
Yeah.
But House is interesting because it's one of those shows, and there's a few like this, that, you know, it from its outset, it seemed like it was just a procedural show. There's a certain formula to most episodes of House. But they did incorporate more and more serialized drama elements in the show, you know, throughout its run. So it became more of a deft mixture of the procedural and the serialized drama, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And more so, and like with all those shows I just mentioned, or most of them, I should say, it helps when you get a great performer to take that main role. Your Shaloubs, your Elbas, your Falks, Hugh Laurie is, you know, the heart and soul. And I think that's the reason more than anything else why we would come back week after week to watch House.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, he was just perfect. It's so funny though, that how much we love House, the character, because if we had him as our physician, we would absolutely loathe him.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. It's funny. If I recall from way back when I recorded with you back in the olden times, you were not the biggest fan of comedies or sitcoms, if I recall. Which is fine.
I know there's running joke that I don't like comedies. and then I made a list one day, and there are a lot of comedies that I like, but movies. So yeah, there are very few sitcoms, I guess, that I like. But now you're probably going to name some, and I'll be like, yeah. Oh, so
I'm just going for one because of the House connection, and yep, it just popped into my head. So, you know, just one of them. It, you know, for everything I have a note on, there'll be three things that just come out of nowhere, and you know, the tangents, if you will. But my tangents hopefully stay on track still.
I love tangents. I know, and then we come back around full circle. So, yeah, see, time is a flat circle.
Oh, Lordy. let's talk about that overhype season. At the time when House was on, one of the shows that was on, and probably a lot of people enjoyed both shows, there was a sitcom, Scrubs.
I did watch some of that because my daughters watched it.
Okay. So, not the main character, but one of the central supporting characters was Dr. Cox, who was very House-like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of mean and nasty and extremely funny, but you know, you wouldn't want him to be your doctor. You really wouldn't want him to be your colleague. On at least one occasion on Scrubs, they make a direct reference to House. They basically riff on House, and clearly that Dr. Cox is basically, he's basically House, or vice versa. I don't have it in front of me. I don't remember when Scrubs started. It'd be cool if they started the same season. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But it's just because they're very similar characters in that sense. It just occurred to me. Okay, so let's get to, so we're talking about House's, we're going to be talking about House's, which is the fourth season. Okay, it is kind of important or valuable to remember, for folks who haven't seen it in a while. You know, the series, when they hit the fourth season, they really shook things up. Because through the first three seasons, you had House and his usual team of diagnosticians, you know, Foreman, Chase, and Cameron. By the end of the previous season, they had broken that team up.
Mm-hmm.
All three characters, oddly enough, to some extent, would remain on the show and still,
right,
more often than not, play major parts, especially Foreman perhaps a bit more than Cameron or Chase, but still they were always there.
Mm-hmm.
They just took on different positions at the Princeton Plainsboro Teaching Hospital. I guess I'm always, mm-hmm, trying to remember what the name of the hospital is. So the fourth season pretty much starts off at House ends up running, I guess you call it, a reality TV style competition,
right,
which starts off with 40 doctors. And as eventually,
one person who wasn't a doctor technically.
Oh gosh! Oh, see.
Yeah, the older man who, I think he was an administrator at, I forget where, a medical school, and he audited all the classes, and he just didn't have the diploma. Yeah, so funny. Yeah, and yet he knew everything. Yeah, sorry. Anyway,
do not apologize. There's nothing. I'll tell you when you need to apologize, young lady.
Okay.
So they eventually whittled it down to what was three new members on the team, because Foreman, guess what, returns to work with House. And of course, one of the doctors who had been in the running pretty much until the nearly end of the competition was Amber, or as House would refer to her, Cutthroat Bitch, who, and she had also started a relationship with the Watson to House's Holmes, Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
So now we can finally get to the episode. How long did that take? No. So this episode, this is going to be one of the few times when I mention the writer. I will make a reference to the writers of the show, but I'm not going to talk about the writers of the show because there's too damn many writers on this episode.
Mm.
There's a team of four writers who handled the script. Five, if you include the woman who came up with the original story concept for the episode. And then if you want to throw in the creator, which would be David Shore, into the mix, because generally speaking, that people in that position often go over the scripts and make any last minute uncredited tweaks to it. That might be six writers who worked on the script.
Well, let me just ask you, though, and so I will apologize, though, for having you pause here with the writers since you said you weren't going to.
No, I don't mind.
Why so many? Because normally, like at least in the film industry, and I'm asking you because you do know something about this, mm-hmm. normally the more writers you have on something, the worse the script is.
It depends on the type of script you're working on. For example, some scripts, they may decide, okay, we want to have this person work on stuff relating to this character because we have more confidence in that, or there may be a certain aspect of the script that, you know, someone might be more skilled in, you know, maybe it's a legal drama and someone who's just more schooled in the ways of law is going to write that mm-hmm. stuff because, you know, this person is more about writing, you know, really sharp dialogue or relationship stuff, but he's just not schooled well enough in the law. You don't want to just have to keep going on the internet to look up stuff. Let that guy do it.
Okay.
It happens. A great example, movie-wise, comedy, Kelly. what many feel is one of those top-tier comedies of all time is Blazing Saddles. There mm-hmm. are a lot of writers on Blazing Saddles. I can't. The poster's across the room. I can't quite make it out from here, but I believe there's at least four or five people credited on that one, including Richard Pryor, as a matter of fact.
Wow. Okay.
And the joke was they brought in Richard Pryor because they thought, oh, you bring him in. And the whole thinking was, oh, he's going to write the Cleavon Little part, you know, the black character. Nope. Pryor didn't want to do that. Pryor wrote all the Mongo stuff.
Wow.
Which is amazing. It's like when you watch Mongo say, Mongo only pawn in Game of Life. It's like, yeah. Apparently, Richard Pryor wrote that line. So, yeah. or supposedly. We don't know that for absolutely sure. It could have been Brooks himself, but I like to think it was Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
And fortunately, although they had that many writers, a team of writers working on the episode, it was directed just by one person. And I didn't look up the phonetic pronunciation of his name, so I'm assuming his last name is pronounced Yatanes? I don't know. Greg Yatanes.
I'm assuming you would pronounce the E-S. Yeah,
Yatanes?
I'm not sure.
Yatanes?
That's what I'm thinking.
Let's go with
Every
that.
Time I saw yeah.
He's my age. I should get his name. I know they were born the same year. Bastard. Much like the fellow you were talking about earlier, another dude who's a TV directing veteran over years. I don't think it's quite as impressive as Daniel Sackheim, but... You know, I did notice that he directed other medical themed dramas like Bones and Nip Tuck, and he's done a bunch of Showtime shows like Banshee and Ray Donovan. I do have something else to say about the direction of this episode, but we're going to save that till post episode discussion. So let's get to the actual episode. Here's the quickie synopsis. I'm just going to take these out of Wiki because I can only come up with so much in my wee brain here. So the synopsis of the episode is basically, House finds himself dazed, confused, and covered in blood after surviving. He's not really covered in blood. The synopsis is incorrect already.
Yeah.
Anyway, bad writers. They should have had a team of writers working on the synopsis.
Exactly.
After surviving a bus accident that left dozens seriously injured. Unable to clearly recall the events leading up to the crash due to his head injuries, House is convinced through his flashbacks a fellow bus passenger is exhibiting signs of a deadly illness prior to the crash. Flashbacks, that's not how I would describe it. I love that I'm ripping apart the wiki synopsis.
Yeah.
Much to the team's dismay, House pushes through the pain of his injuries, desperate to piece together the fragments of his shattered memory in order to save someone who might not even know he could be dying. And once he learns the truth, he and his team are left shell-shocked when it's discovered that Amber... Oh, heck, this is the only time I've ever seen Amber's last name, by the way.
Yeah, they just never use it. It's like everyone else, it goes by their last name. Like, I don't even know their first names. You know, it's just last name 13, Amber.
That's true. You're right. So it's Amber Vilakis, Wilson's girlfriend, is the one who's dying. And there you have the episode. So, Kelly, you start. I'm just fucking with you. I've been yap.
Well, as far as the covered with blood, yeah, it was a little head injury, a little blood when he's at a strip joint. Yeah, so that was like perfect. It's funny, like something I remembered from House is that he does hire sex workers.
Oh, yeah.
But in the first 3.5 seasons, we see that only once. And then this, you know, when he's at the strip joint. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I just thought that was interesting. Maybe in later seasons, you know, we see him with the sex worker again.
I think there's a couple other times. I feel it's one of those things they sometimes will make reference to more often than us actually seeing it. You know?
Yeah, they must. Yeah, because it was something I really associated with them. So I thought that even though that was a brief scene, it really sort of highlighted to me some of his guilt, you know, not necessarily that he's feeling, but guilt placed on him, right. You know, having been at the bar the night before and yeah, sorry, I'm sort of jumping ahead, but again, full circle.
Doesn't matter. However we choose to speak about the episode, it does not have to take on the form of a blow by blow recap. I wasn't planning to do it. I have a little notes. We know the order of the episode. We can talk about it chronologically, but you can jump around. If we already did the synopsis, we already know what happens.
True. If you're listening and you haven't watched it, then yeah.
Yeah. Spoiler.
Exactly.
I'm more interested in talking about rewatching the show this week, and I remembered, oh my god, I kind of had a weird crush on Lisa Edelstein from this show. I forgot all about that. Then I'm watching this episode, and then when she's in the schoolgirl outfit, I was like, oh, is that the reason I had? No, I think I already liked her before that, but that certainly helped a lot.
Yeah.
I do love the conceit that, you know, someone wanders out of a bus accident and go and walk straight into a strip club.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Only he could do that. Yeah. Right.
Not even a bar, a strip.
Right.
Because he's already at a bar.
Yeah. Yeah. He already did that. Yeah. Already did the bar. So now let's go find a lady.
Yeah. And it's an interesting episode as you go through it because, although maybe they play with this in a few other episodes to a certain degree, you know, In a weird fashion, House is both the victim and the hero in this episode. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And I like that we're pursuing a mystery that's not simply, oh, what's the person dying of? Which is usually what the mystery is in the show.
True.
And this is like, what is it he's forgetting? Or who is it he's forgetting?
Mm-hmm.
I will admit that I was kind of like, you know, I was like shaking a finger at the screen because I was like, you're so smart and you're not picking up on the thing that's around. When she said like, resin, the first thing you should have thought of was amber.
Right.
Because that's the first thing I would have thought of. You saw Jurassic Park. Shut up.
Exactly. Yes. It's like, is that not in the same universe? Jurassic Park and House. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they are. He probably doesn't like Sam Neill either.
Nobody would look at that and think resin.
Oh, by the way, my I have to mention it. I'm just going to pull this out of nowhere. Because one of the reasons I've always adored House is his incredibly inappropriate and thus incredibly funny lines that he will throw out there. When early on in the episode, when they're still in basically the ER triage area, and when he first approaches the bus driver and he refers to him as Lalf Clamden, I couldn't stop laughing because I have the captioning on as well. So it spelled it out for me. And I was like, oh, that's excellent. That made me so happy. I'm sorry.
So if I had taken notes on how many inappropriate things he said, you know, throughout. Oh my God, I would have run out of memory on my computer. I took a few, like I wrote down three things. So, and I didn't write down the number of the episodes, but just so the one where there was a man who was like 600 pounds,
right?
And he cooked a lot, and they were like kind of trying to get him to lose weight. And he's like, you know, no, I really enjoy cooking and whatever, blah, blah, blah. So all of the fat jokes they made, a woman with dwarfism, and they thought that they assumed that her daughter was a dwarf as well. And, you know, never back then they weren't saying little people. Mm-hmm. And the constant ribbing, not ribbing, you know, it was cruel, you know, he was outright cruel to them. But the mother just gave it right back. She was outstanding. And, then this actually didn't have anything to do with House, but it was, like him, Dr. House. But just something in one of the episodes, a nurse turned out to be a trans woman. Mm-hmm. And Foreman then got turned off by that. And they didn't say trans. They just said she used to be a man.
Okay.
And so I was thinking, okay, hopefully they would have done that differently today, you know? But yeah, there's so many times I was like cringing and wondering, how would they do that today? Could they even do that today? You know, could they have his character today? You know, this was 16 years ago that it started.
Right.
That was a lifetime ago, considering, quote, political. We don't even use the phrase politically correct anymore. You know, because we're just beyond that. Like with cancel culture, for example.
I for one despise cancel culture. So I've never talked about it on. I don't know if I've talked about it on this podcast before, but I can't stand it. It's insane.
Yeah, it's too much. It's too much.
That tends to be the issue with a lot of these things, where whichever direction you're going. Once you veer too far, then it's like you're going to lose people, because then it's like people are going to be like, okay, it's enough. We're going too far. And you know, it's usually on the far right side, but when you have all the stuff, you know, when we've moved beyond woke, it's like, okay, we're, you know, my eyes are wide open. Stop already. Okay. You know, you're going too far. Could you have, yeah, I think you probably could. This is the kind of conversation that always happens when we look at things, you know, from like the 70s. Like, could you have an Archie Bunker again? Could you have like Blazing Saddles again? Whatever. Mm-hmm. I think it might be a bit on the quote unquote courageous side, but mm-hmm. I think you still should be able to do that, especially mm-hmm. if it's comedy, because, you know, comedy is there to puncture those things and to make a point. That's why I think that's why it's actually amazing to watch an episode of All in the Family now, because you realize it's like what they were doing was amazing then, and it would be amazing now. And there's a lot of stuff going on then.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah. And yet, so back to this episode, tangent.
Thank you.
You know, we didn't see this episode was focused so much on House's concussion and hallucinations, or his almost being psychic in some way, and his trying to solve that problem, that his normal personality was tamped down so much that it was almost thrown out the window.
Right.
You know, that one episode of being rude, or that one instance of being rude to the bus driver, that was really it, wasn't it, for that episode?
As far as to that degree, perhaps. Right. I mean, he gets his shots in here and there throughout the episode, mm-hmm. depending on what the situation is. Either he's dealing with that when he's dealing with that nurse that Cuddy has forced out of in his home, and he's, you know, hiding out in the bathroom using her phone and stuff. Yeah. And telling her that it's his colon that stole her phone or something.
Right.
But yeah, because again, and it might be the reason, one of the reasons this show is largely considered, you know, the House episode of House episodes, it's because it's one of the episodes that really breaks the formula. It shatters it. And it changes the way they go about things and the way he goes about things. And, you know, it's no coincidence it's called House's Head, because we're spending so much time in House's Head in this episode. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love the conceit of all the different ways we go through to get those, you know, as that lame-o synopsis. I love that it was lame, by the way. That synopsis, yeah. But flashbacks. And it's like how each one is derived through a different means, whether it be a specific drug he takes or hypnosis. I love that Chase knows hypnosis. It's so ridiculous, I believe. It's like, oh, yeah, sure. Oh, yeah, that was that year in Melbourne, blah, blah, blah. Of course. Right. Yeah, it never came up before. Yeah, sure. Why not?
And then, never needed before this, yeah.
And then he even does, like, a sensory deprivation tank. And my first thought, and maybe, again, it's because I've just had surgery myself. Okay, follow me with this. If you're in a sensory deprivation tank, that's the little thing where you go into the tank, it's filled with water, you close it up, you're in the dark with the water, and then he makes the altered state jokes, which, yep. Again, most people won't get because no one remembers the movie Altered States, but I got it. I don't even think I ever saw it, but I knew the movie. I know the movie. Mm-hmm. You're in a tub of water. Don't you somewhat submerge to a certain degree?
Only a little bit. It's very salty, so you're really buoyant. And it, I mean, you're not floating on top, but it's a float tank. So you're mostly floating. Yeah. Okay. It's like being in the ocean and you know how you just naturally float, you know, so it's not like a lake where you really can sink or in a swimming pool. Yeah. I've been in one before.
My first thought is they just sewed up the back of his head.
Yeah.
You can't be having your sutures in water. Or salt water, I guess, for that matter. It really, that would really be a. I've been wrapping this foot and like I've been double bagging with packing tape and rubber bands to keep and all the bandages to keep that thing dry. I'm pretty sure you got to keep the stitches in your head dry too.
They can restitch him. I mean, he is in the hospital, so
right.
You're right. But you know, he is a rule breaker, a maverick, a renegade.
Oh, by the
rogue.
By the way. Once I'm up on my feet again, and I can finally walk like a normal person for the first time in years, and I can start going to the gym again, I totally want to do the bagel test on the treadmill.
Oh God, yeah.
I gotta find a doctor. It's like, is that a thing? Is that really a thing? Because that's amazing.
Yeah, I'd want somebody around though to make sure I didn't choke.
I'd want someone around to make sure that the lox is fresh. No, I'm just kidding. another way he does it through smells, where he just starts smelling the clothes.
That was great. I loved that. Yeah, and you know, at first he just picks up the one article of clothing, but then it was better when he just like drops his whole face in the whole stack of like laundry. That was excellent.
Oh, it was hysterical because later on when we're talking about a few other episodes of The House, there's another episode where he does a face plant into a cake in the exact same manner. And I watched them within a couple hours of each other. And it's like, is this a thing? Is this a thing on House where he would just do a face plant on something?
That's great.
Dirty clothes, food, whatever.
Yeah.
I seem
to remember a face plant in Australia in The Leftovers.
Oh, you and
Scott Glenn or I forget the actor's name, but John Murphy. I think it was, you know, Scott Glenn. Yeah. Hmm. Sorry, I just, you know, did the annual Leftovers rewatch. So,
I wonder if The Leftover makes the top 20, I wonder if Kelly will be co-hosting that. By the way, if I'll say it right now, if it turns out The Leftovers makes the top 20, spoiler, it does.
Spoiler alert.
Yes, I don't care. I'm not telling you where it is, so you know. If you are schooled in peak TV or whatever you want to call it, you know there is that's a show that should have an episode in there. So it's going to. Just it's not going to be from season one because we'll talk about it on that podcast. My feelings about season one are not the same as the subsequent seasons. But I might change this podcast form. It's like, you know what? Here's the intro. Kelly, take it away. Just let you take it. You can even bring your friends. I'll just sit on the side and I'll be like, I'll just keep going like this. Yes.
Goodness.
You're right, Kelly.
Just chime in occasionally.
Yeah, there we go.
There you go.
I'll do an impression of anyway. So, back to the episode.
Faceplant laundry.
The faceplant. I just love it's all these inventive ways to try to jog his memory, which is like just a different way of going about things, all the way up to when they get to the actual trying to recreate like a bus reenactment by having everybody all these people come on the bus and bring, you know, pictures of the different passengers and everything to try to once again jog his memory. And he keeps seeing that one brunette woman who's an actress I've seen in something else. I should have looked her up because I know her from something and I cannot think of what it is. Too late now. And again, it was one of those things where the moment she starts pointing to the, I think even at the time when I was watching it back in, I guess this episode would have been 2008, I guess, eight or nine. I think I was saying, it's Amber. We know it's Amber because she showed up. They're cluing you in on it from the get-go.
Yeah.
The fact that she's the first person who shows up in the bar early in his first kind of memory thing with the hypnosis is kind of a big hint there, you know. It's like, hey, it's her. There's no other. She keeps coming up for a reason, but it's always the thing that's right in front of your face is the thing that you don't is what you don't see.
So. Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because, you know, you have this episode, and I think one of the reasons it's so I'm guessing it's so well regarded is number one, as I said, it kind of changes and it plays with the usual house formula to begin with. And they hadn't done that as much at this point in the series. They certainly do that a few more times later on. There's a couple examples, but they're still more about narrative structure. This one, I think, really just changes how they go about the episode. It's technically a really great episode. I mean, again, it's, you know, the direction is really impressive on it. Mm-hmm. And then you switch to the second part, which is Wilson's heart, which, you know, was actually going to be the episode at number 20, and I switched it, but I'll talk about it a little bit later. But it's interesting how very different the two parts are. And I think it's one of those things where I think there could be some people who might prefer Wilson's heart because that's the one that really plays on emotions far more. It's much more, you know, I know one listener perhaps somewhat negatively referred to it as being a bit schmaltzy. I wouldn't go that far. I don't agree with that assessment. That's a little too negative, you know, plus I like to cry, but
and he's still solving a problem.
Yes.
In Wilson's heart, just as he was in House's head. It's just what he's solving in Wilson's heart is the what. And what he's solving in House's head is the who.
And when you return to him trying to solve the what, that becomes more the usual House standard.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is the obstacle to a certain degree is himself because of what he's been going through with his memory, with his injury, whereas before it's just, you know, here's the whiteboard and we'll just keep throwing different ideas out here until we get to the right one, which, you know, it's a trope of House. We see that, you know, it reminds me of like Law and Order when you watch an episode of Law and Order. And, oh, they think it's this one. No, they think it's this one. You know, then by the time you get to this, oh, no, it's going to turn out to be this one. They never get the diagnosis right at the beginning of an episode of House. It's like, so he's at that point. By the way, I mentioned that I'd watched 10 episodes, right? And I think I average watching at least one episode from almost every season. I don't think I watched any from two. Season two might be the only one I didn't watch any from. I might have seen one in season three. I can't remember for sure. I don't have them written in front of me or anything. I'm disappointed in one thing. My recollection of House, it's almost like a running gag, is that a million times, I thought it was a million times, one of the diagnoses someone will throw out will be lupus. And someone eventually says, it's never lupus.
Right.
I am very disappointed. Lupus was not mentioned in any of the 10 episodes I watched. I could not believe that. I was like, I was going to do shots. I was going to do shots.
That is so funny.
I got everybody lies a million times. I was waiting. Yeah. That was the other thing. You're like, you know, do a shot every time they say they make a reference.
Well, and how about every time someone crashes? You know, that is like every episode and every surgery. They need the crash cart.
You have to. Well, he's not solving a dermatological issue.
Right.
He's not trying to figure out how to pop a pimple. They have to be at death's door, and you have to have that, come to Jesus moment where they actually do die on the table for a second there before they're brought back to life. But yeah, if it's 176, I would guarantee it's happened at least 100 times then. It's probably 100 times at least, which is a lot.
Yeah.
So
something you said earlier, real quick, you said about in House's head that he is both victim and hero. In Wilson's heart, I think then we add villain to that. Yeah.
That's where I was going to go. Very good.
Sorry.
No, don't say that. I want you to say these things. That's why we have you here. I'm aware of how much I talk on these damn things. That's why, it's like, pretend it's like the debate tomorrow and just put my microphone on mute and go. Yeah. Anyway. Oh, by the way, I love that we're talking about House and we clearly can hear ambulance sirens going
nice.
By.
It's
so perfect.
Well, my podcat woke up, so at least we're not getting snoring over here. So, the ambulance is perfect.
That's perfect. I cannot believe that just happened. Actually, I can. New York.
Yeah.
So, I'm just skimming through what else happened in the episode.
It really is hard to separate these two episodes.
It would be like it's almost like talking about the first half of a book or something like that.
Yeah,
you kind of have to finish it.
Like you were saying though, one thing that makes House's head so different is that what he is trying to solve is who he is trying to solve a what as well, but the biggest thing is who, and that's just. He hasn't done that before. He always has a patient come in. It's never who here is dying,
Right. Right.
So that part is just like revolutionary for the show. It's weird. And works so beautifully. And for him to have those hallucinations and be, what seems to be delusional,
mm-hmm.
But he ends up being right. And it is based in reality because he saw Amber, as we discover, he saw her with a piece of metal, through her leg, and he saw her being carried out of the bus. He helped her. He tied her scarf around her leg, so he knew she was really her. Oh, and he saw her take the amantadine. I forgot to look that up to see what it does. I meant to do that. So it was all based in reality, and it was just coming across as like magical. But he often does sort of come across as magical, or like, he just gets these sparks of inspiration and intuition and just whammo knows things.
It's the Holmesian quality of him.
Yeah.
And absolutely. And I think what makes it such a highly regarded episode, because the mystery is a who. It becomes a mystery that the audience can somehow, at least to a certain degree, participate in. A medical mystery, unless the person watching the show is a doctor themselves, we're not going to come up with the diagnosis before he does. Because why would we? How could we? Unless we are doctors.
Right.
A who? It's not even a. It's not even a whodunit. It's who is it?
Right.
It's like, oh, I wonder. Now, of course, the flip of that is they're playing this mystery up for an entire episode. It's almost one of those, it's so obvious, but it's not, because it wouldn't work as a great episode and a great mystery if it was just some random person on the bus.
Yeah.
It has to be someone we know. And therefore, well, who's the one person we haven't seen? Her, you know, there you go.
Yeah.
And, you know, unless they brought back like Sailor Ward or something like that.
Right, right. Oh man, I love her.
Oh yes, she's she'll always be the dead wife and fugitive to me.
Oh yes. Oh my God.
That was her, wasn't it? Yeah.
Sure. Yes, yes. Oh, and she's just so gorgeous, and oh my God, I have always loved her.
Oh, see, I love that you can express a love for an actor, and it's obviously just total admiration. And I just went totally sleazy. We were like, man, I forgot how much I had the hots for Lisa Edelstein back in the day. That's the nature of this podcast. No, I kid. Yeah, so I and the other thing that's interesting about when you look at the two parts, because they're structured so differently, did you find that when you watch, even though they're I believe they're pretty much like all network television series tend to be, at least at that time, I believe they're the same length. Doesn't House's head seem to go a lot faster than Wilson's heart does?
Yeah.
It's the pacing. Yeah.
It did.
Because because the pacing of that, you know, it's the mystery and him trying to figure it out throughout the whole episode. Whereas in Wilson's heart, especially when you get to a certain point where, well, there's no more mystery anymore. It's just now, how is she going to eventually pass away? And how is that going to be handled? And the procession of people going to see her? And, you know, what's going to happen between House and Wilson? It kind of, and most appropriately, but it slows that down. Mm-hmm. And it's just a slower paced episode by comparison. And it should be. I just find it fascinating because usually when you watch any quote unquote two parter, you know, they feel somewhat similar to each other other than the fact that you might have, you know, a bit more of a climax at the end of the second part than the first part, depending what kind of show you're dealing with. This one, I felt the vibe and the tone and whatever was very different. I didn't look it up. I could while we're doing this, but when I click on things on the computer, it always makes noise. Nah, who cares?
What did? How long they are?
No. I'm sure about that. Were they directed?
No, they're directed by different people.
See that?
I just looked.
That's
Wilson's Heart is directed by Katie Jacobs.
I see. Well, there you go. That's why. No, I'm just kidding. If you had the same director.
Yeah, I have IMDb open during every podcast on my computer and on my phone, you know, just in case.
Oh, by the way, technically, Wilson's Heart is 1 minute longer.
Yeah, one whole minute.
45. And by the way, that probably means it just has a longer end title credit sequence because it's the last episode of the season. So I don't even know if that length is even means anything for the show, personally.
Now, they both have a 9.8 rating on IMDb.
Yes, I saw that. So, I guess I can let me clear that little thing up right now. Okay. I mentioned earlier in the podcast about, you know, making the selections and how I try to keep my own – I work to keep my own personal bias out of it. And – either later in this podcast or more likely the next one, I'll go into a bit more detail on that. You know, suffice to say there are favorite series of mine, drama series, that aren't even on the list. And there are shows that are on this list where my personal favorite episode is not the episode that made the list. But another thought I had, which I was wrong about, because I saw House's Head appeared on more lists than Wilson's Heart did. But not, it wasn't like, you know, it disappeared on 7 and the other one only appeared on 1. It was like, I'm trying to remember, I should have, I think it was like 5-3, something like that. Both had a 9.8 on IMDb. I think House's Head is ranked higher on Record. I think all the different things, it was kind of going back and forth. And House's Head probably was ahead. But I had it in my mind that they were a two-parter, and I let my personal bias kick in, and I always think, if you're going to use an episode of a two-parter, you use the second episode because that's the episode that brings resolution to the story. So therefore, so by that logic, it's therefore more satisfying and therefore should be the better episode. So even though I'd done up the whole little image that I was going to post on Facebook and on Twitter and whatever for House's Head, I kept thinking about it and I said, no, I got to make it Wilson's Heart. So I made it Wilson's Heart. That's what I posted on Facebook. And then, one of our listeners, David, kind of took me to task, in a friendly way for a change, about it. And I was kind of going back and forth because I wasn't feeling great about the decision. And then I actually just watched them both right after. And I said, I gotta change it. And I let you know, I went in, I changed all the posts. It's like, I gotta stick with what it should have been in the first place. It's gotta be House's Head. It's a better episode. It just is. I mean, and that's not to take anything. Obviously, Wilson's Heart is they both got a 9.8, as you pointed out. But I think House's Head just from also from a technical standpoint, as well as all the other things, and the fact that as we talked, it's just a different kind of an episode is what ranks it higher. What makes Wilson's Heart different is only because someone passes away in it. Although if you watch, you know, enough House, she's not the only character who passes away in the course of 8 seasons on House.
Yeah.
So that was it. There will be another, I think there's at least one other quote unquote part of a two-parter that will make the top 20. I am confident I picked the right one in that case. I am not going to change now. I am sure I picked the right one. I think I did. No, I picked the right one. Anyway, is there anything else about the specific episode that occurs to you? Or we can talk about more post-episode stuff now if you want. Whatever you want.
Yeah, I think that was it for that episode. Yeah, specific things.
It's interesting because it's such a quick, fast episode, but it's very streamlined in what they're trying to accomplish, and we're only pursuing one story. So therefore it's not, if we were doing a House podcast back in the day, unlike some of our podcasts on the STV podcast, which can go an hour, hour and a half, whatever, we could probably knock out episodes like this in probably 35, 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. Probably. Unlike say, let's hypothetically say that we end up doing The Leftovers on this one. Pretty sure we're going to take a bit more time talking about the episode.
Yeah.
Pretty sure, because there's a whole lot more stuff going on in a show like that, as well as any of the others. The thing and I get to mention the really fun part. I gotta talk about this. And since Dan's not here because he hates the Emmys, I gotta. this episode turns out, it was one more check mark in why it was going to go on the list. It actually won the Emmy for Best Directing of a Drama Series that year.
Wow.
Now, you can gush about it. You know, you have all these nominees over the past several years, which are usually, it's usually dominated by like 8,000 Game of Thrones episodes or whatever the flavor of the year might have been. You know, there's been decent years. But that year, which I think this was 2008, I think I didn't write down the year. Who cares? Pretty sure it probably might have been one of the strongest lists of directing nominees ever. For TV drama. Let me tell you what else was nominated. Let me get rid of the one that was fun. There was some decent episode of Boston Legal in there. I was a fan of Boston Legal, but who cares? We can toss that one aside. That, you had the House's Head, you had this Boston Legal. You had the pilot, the first episode of the pilot for Damages, which by the way, is a great first episode of a show. Damages, the first season or two is fantastic. It's a great pilot. And Glenn Close just kicks ass. I mean, that one was like, wow, I was a little surprised to beat that. You know what else had pilots that were nominated that year?
What?
Mad Men and Breaking Bad.
Whoa. That's crazy.
That's insane. And by the way, that's right. And it turns out within 5 months of each other, AMC pretty much elbowed HBO, FX, the broadcast network. They premiered two of the greatest TV series of all time within 5 months of each other.
Wow.
One was in January of the following year. That's why. So it wasn't in the same year. So I can't say in the same year, but there was still 5 months from each other. And by the way, as some might know, those happen to be my two favorite TV dramas of all time. Right. So there's that. They might appear on this list too at some point.
Just maybe.
But is that insane? I mean, even if, like, granted, if you never watched Damages, that doesn't mean anything to anybody, and who cares? But this beat the first episode of Mad Men and Breaking Bad? Are you kidding me?
Wow.
But, you know, it did. Yeah.
Yeah.
that's insane. But, you know, wow.
That's wild. Yeah.
Okay, let me see what we got here. So, all right. You've just watched, as you mentioned earlier, you watched roughly like 3.5 seasons worth, or yeah, possibly more when you think about the number of episodes, whatever, and this one. But I think you're also, did you bounce ahead to watch any special ones that came on later, or you just stuck to just watching chronologically?
Yeah, I just stuck to watching chronologically to build up to this episode or okay, these two episodes. You know, now I'm tempted to keep going, well, but I have other things I need to watch, for Geek Girl Soup
and life.
And just, you know, and life. Yeah. Other things that are airing. But oh my God, this is just so much fun to get back into and watch. And I started watching because of my daughters years ago. So it made me think of them. Like they had one of them, I forget which one of them, because they left it here. So one of them has the entire DVD set. So I currently have it in my basement because, you know, like they left their adults now, but they left their stuff here. So I kept the DVD set, you know, I'm not going to throw it out, even though who has stuff to play DVDs anymore? I mean, well, I currently don't have a DVD player, but I can play it on my PS4.
I always played it on my PS3. I never bought a video game except for one I threw, which I sold. I just use it for DVDs and Blu-ray. Then.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. So yeah, and I loved the show. So this was really great. And honestly, you know, now I want to remember. So what does happen next season, you know, season 5, because I don't remember how Wilson comes back and treats House, and how does House treat however he feels guilty. I don't remember how guilty he does feel.
I watched it. You want me to tell you?
Yes, please. Go for it.
Okay. If I recall, when we pick up the next season, some time has passed. I think it's been a few months have passed. And Wilson had gone on some kind of like an extended sabbatical, I guess. But at that point, House is back to just being House. Same old, same old, whatever. Wilson comes back, but with the intention he's resigning.
Oh.
And he wants to leave, and House keeps bothering him while ignoring his own case, of course. Mm-hmm. And it reaches a certain point where Wilson just kind of rips into him and about, you know, just like not even being friends anymore or whatever. And he just wants to leave. But of course, as we all know, that doesn't last very long. You know,
right.
they work it out and he ends up, you know, back. He ends up back. But he initially comes back with the intention that he just doesn't want to be around this stuff anymore. And yeah. I think one of the main people who tried to show him, who doesn't go out of her way to try to convince him to stay, mm-hmm, but is the one person who probably has the most compelling case to show why he needs to get over this. Mm-hmm. As far as the being there reminds him of her. Mm. Cameron, as you will recall, her first husband passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about, you know, so she's the one who can relate to having a loved one, someone that you were, you know, that you were with dying, you know,
yeah,
unlike all these other people.
Yeah.
And he mentioned how it come, and she talks about, when she says something like that, he says, you know, I saw someone wearing a blah, 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 whatever it is the other day, and it made me think of him.
Mm.
That's not a read, because that'll always happen. You can't,
yeah.
You know, she makes it like it never goes away. But you can't run away from it. It's always, you know, and I think that, if I recall, I think that was probably the more compelling argument compared to anybody else. I mean, Foreman just said he should leave. He said, yeah, you should get the hell out of here. I wish I could get the hell out of here, whatever, you know, whatever.
Mm.
So it's mostly just, what's the name, just calling him an idiot. And Cuddy keeps trying to, like, get them to talk to each other, and she fails miserably every single time, but whatever. It's fine. I kind of want, since you did watch some of the earlier ones, and I think at least some of that can dovetail into this little, we can call it a segment if you want. I don't know if it'll be a fully fleshed out segment or not. There were definitely a few other House episodes that really could have been strong contenders for this spot. One of them is in season 1. it's got to, and it's actually one that David did bring up, but I didn't want to tell him it was actually one of the quote unquote three finalists maybe for the spot. Three Stories. It's in season, it's in late in season one. That's actually, he's not going to believe me when I say it's actually my, that might be my favorite episode of House. It's one of my top two, at least. Do you remember the one I'm talking about?
I am looking. Oh yes. Okay. Yeah. Oh, that was great.
That's,
yeah,
that's the one where we finally find out a lot more about House's past and see what actually happened. We meet his,
yeah,
his
what ex, happens to his leg.
Like thing. He, and it's done. It's a brilliant episode because it's told, it's done in such a really entertaining fashion, and which is very humorous. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the whole thing with Carmen Electra throughout the whole thing, and the guy, yeah, and the guy literally dressed like a farmer, even with the freaking hayseed sticking out of his mouth in the ear, which makes no sense. But yet, you can have an episode that has that plus an incredible amount of pathos and sadness in it as well. It's probably why that would have been, that was a really strong contender. It was a really great, great episode. Yeah. Clearly one of their best ones. The other one I would point out, the season six premiere. So we bounce forward a little bit. Just titled Broken. It's actually a two-part. It's Broken Parts 1 and Part 2. Basically, it's House meets One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Because it's after House has been committed to a facility, shall we say. You get to see Hugh Laurie and Andre Brower, two dueling TV acting titans, going at each other. And guess what? You know who else turns out to be in the episodes? Some, this little rapping Puerto Rican kid named Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Oh, how funny.
By the way, it's extremely funny because he does his rapping thing, whatever. And you realize the way he does it and the cadence is like, oh, is that the way he does everything? Am I not as impressed with Hamilton as I was now? Because he's doing like a talent show. And it's like, it's the same kind of thing, except he can't come up with lines. And then Hugh Laurie gets on stage with him and finishes each one for him, which is amazing. So that kind of combo is fascinating. It's a really fun episode. Great episode. The first part is really great. Second part, you know, a little schmuck. The first part was the other major contender. I would say if you want to just say screw all the other episodes and just bounce ahead and watch that one, it's a very strong, it's a two-part, it's great. Again, it's got everything in it. The only thing it doesn't have is it doesn't have the opening credit sequence in either episode.
Okay.
And we don't see anybody else.
Okay.
So it's Hugh Laurie and all the people in the asylum. We don't see any of the people from the hospital in those two episodes.
By the way, that was something annoying on watching these on Amazon is they didn't have the Massive Attack song in the music in the opening credits, except for a few of them at the beginning of season four. And maybe they do later, but in the entire first three seasons, and it was like the first couple in season four, and then it went back to the remade. So I read that it was something about the licensing, and when it went to Amazon or even some other things, they had to change it out.
Yeah, I was a little confused about that. It's funny you should mention it. In fact, it's almost psychic that you mentioned it, because I was talking about this with Brian after we recorded Fargo last night, as something like, I don't know if I'm going to bring it up or not, but I was watching all these episodes and I was getting kind of annoyed because I wasn't hearing what I consider like the classic House theme. However, when I'm watching them, again, I leave the captioning on. Mm-hmm. And the caption always, whatever the music is, it says it's Massive Attack's Teardrop, which made me curious. I was like, huh. But I was like, and because I could see some note, whatever. So then I actually listened to the entire actual song, which is like a 5.5 minute thing. Mm-hmm. And I realized, okay, what they're using is actually like pieces of a different part of the song.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the thing that we're most familiar with, which I would consider like the House theme,
yeah,
is the beginning of the song.
It's the intro to the song,
which is the best part of it. I agree. I didn't like the other ones as much. If you go on YouTube, you can find like a clip, which is like a minute and a half, because apparently they did alternate later on, and so some of these were used for different seasons. and they show them whatever. I know it's, I thought it was something, I did think it was something with the licensing and something with the UK. Something like that, whatever. I think, but oddly enough, House's Head, I think, has the music.
Even though I just watched it today, I don't even remember. It's all a blur when you binge for like 4 days.
I chose to watch the episode one more time a few hours ago, and I noticed that, and I went, "That's funny," because I mentioned I watched 10 episodes of it. Mm-hmm. That might be the only one of the 10 that had that had the actual music. So there, it was meant to be the one we picked.
Cool. Yeah.
And how about the guest stars?
Oh, wow. So, yeah, I didn't write down everyone. It was just crazy how many amazing guest stars. One, though, that I want to comment on, Journey Smollett from Lovecraft Country. I mean, she just jumped out because, you know, the season finale of Lovecraft Country just happened. She was 20 years old when she appeared on House.
I did not even realize she was on it.
Season 3, episode 5. One of the only ones I wrote down. So let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Fools for Love. A husband and wife being treated caused Foreman to ponder the strength of true love. And House abuses one too many patients. How is that different? And potentially devastating repercussions. Again, you know, why do you even need that line? So I don't remember exactly what happened. But there was someone from The Leftovers, from Off Ramp. The woman in Off Ramp. So that was the one where Tommy brings people from the Guilty Remnant out of the group and brings them to his mom, Lori. I guess I shouldn't say more. In case people haven't seen The Leftovers, and if you haven't, oh my God. Anyway, it was a woman from Off Ramp. Yeah, that episode.
If you haven't seen it.
I love seeing David Morse. You know, he had an extended role in House as a detective. And I also think that was cool because, of course, he was one of the main characters in Saint Elsewhere, playing a doctor.
That's correct. Yep. There's a cavalcade of like major names from both TV and movies that have showed up over the years on it. Like the people you mentioned, you got people from the Marvel, the MCU, like Jeremy Renner and Michael B. Jordan. You got James Earl Jones and Taraji P. Henson. You got the array of musical people. You got before he started doing that NCI, whatever the heck show he does now. You had LL Cool J.
Oh yeah, he was in the Death Row guy. Yeah,
right. The only time I've ever been able to stomach Dave Matthews is in an episode of this, I believe, and he actually plays one of my favorite pieces songs in that, if I recall. Meatloaf is in an episode. Mira Sorvino, there's one all based around her. And most unexpected, I totally forgot he shows up in an episode. Carl Reiner is in an episode.
And
he's not even the main patient. He just happens to be in it, which makes it even better, I think. And there's dozens of others. It's just one of those shows. Obviously, any show that's popular that's been on for 8 seasons, you're going to end up like that, you know. But it's kind of cool when you're like, oh. Especially when they're like really, really young before anyone even knew who they were. That's kind of cool. I mean, everyone knows who James Earl Jones was at that time.
Right.
They might not have known who Michael B. Jordan was. You know, they might have only known him from literally from All My Children and the first season of Wire at that point.
Right.
Might not have known him for anything else. By the way, I love that Michael B. Jordan will always, he always brings up All My Children and how much he owes them. So it's like, well done. Well done, son. Well done.
Yeah. Yeah. When I watched The Wire, the only time I watched it was like a year ago. I know that's terrible, but at least I've seen it now. All and right. I did not recognize Michael B. Jordan. And the people I was watching with had to point him out. I'm like, really? Really? You know, and looked it up on IMDb to confirm, but yeah.
Did you recognize Idris? No, I'm just kidding.
Idris was why I was watching.
Because I'd say, if you're someone who's into Idris Elba, that's a good one to watch.
I don't think I had a TV when it was on originally. This is when I was married to my first husband and he got rid of our televisions. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
Very cool. Very, very cool. So, yeah. So that, I mean, that's pretty much it. Again, when I first imagined doing, you know, this whole great TV drama, greatest TV drama episodes, blah, blah, I didn't anticipate I would have an episode of House in there. It's just when I started going through everything, and it's also because once I had to eliminate certain shows, and I think that's why when I initially thought of this, there were certain shows I was sure were going to be part of the list. However, I had to disqualify certain shows for a number of reasons. And when you do that, all of a sudden something moves up, and it moves up, and guess what? Out of nowhere, House makes number 20. It was crazy. I was like, oh. Okay, I guess House is going to be in here. Awesome. I did not expect that, you know, but, you know, to give an example, I've mentioned before, if we've already covered a specific episode, a podcast was already devoted to a specific episode, then it cannot qualify for this list. So therefore, if the best episode of, say, Fargo, for example, comes from season 2, and by the way, it does. Guess what? Fargo therefore doesn't make the list. Or the one that really hurt, but I had to be honest with myself about it, The Americans. I was sure The Americans was going to be on the list until I really thought about it, and I looked at everything. I was like, I'm sorry, as much, you know, the season finale in season 1 is a great episode. The Do Male Robots Dream of Electric Sheep is an all-time great episode. But gotta say, the best episode of The Americans turns out to be the series finale. Guess what? We covered that on the podcast. We did a whole thing on it.
Oh, okay.
Couldn't make the, so therefore The Americans does not make the cut. Thankfully.
That's not cool, man.
We already covered it.
But then you should just go in there and you say refer to podcast number.
I'm mentioning it right now.
God. Next
week I'll say.
The Americans, Matthew Reese and Carrie Russell. I know
they're good friends of mine. I know. So.
Oh, he won an Emmy finally.
I know. So they got their reward. So.
Give them an award? Y'all have an annual serious TV drama?
We did it 1 year. Okay. You remember. We did. Well, actually, yeah. We did the Snubbies.
Oh, that's right.
I love the Snubbies. Right. And I never did it again. I don't remember why. Although it's funny that that Facebook group is still open. It's still there. It's still there. Every time when I look, when you have all your groups lined up in Facebook, I still see it. Like,
yeah.
I should just post something there just out of nowhere. Just to see, see if anyone, any of you guys go. It's like, what? It'll show up in your news feed. Like, what the hell is this?
Right.
From 2016 or whatever it was. Yeah. I mean, I did the only exception to that rule because I don't regard it as an exception. Perfect. How it all comes full circle. Time is full, whatever you said, flat circle. Your McConaughey-isms. I'd mentioned earlier that the last time you were on this podcast was on one of our podcasts that covered Mad Men, a full season of Mad Men. Mm-hmm. Now, to be clear, those podcasts, although we might have discussed any number of episodes in the podcast, they were not episode-centric. A specific episode didn't get an entire 45, 50, whatever segment devoted to it.
Yeah.
Therefore, anything from the first 6 seasons of Mad Men can qualify. The final season cannot qualify. So if it was, so let's say I thought the final episode of Mad Men was the best Mad Men episode of all time, then Mad Men doesn't make the list. Thankfully, that's not the case. So my Mad Men still gets me on the list.
Hey. I did a rewatch of Mad Men earlier this year, I think during the pandemic.
And I love you for it. You think I'm happy that I can, you think I'm happy that I can't have a Better Call Saul episode in this list? Because it would be. But we've done every episode.
There's no Better Call Saul on
can't
the list.
Can't do it. It's the rule. I know. And one would say, well, you made the rule. It's like, you know what? I also don't want to talk about an episode for another again that I've already covered. So it's also that I've already covered the episode. So we've already. Right. So too bad.
Wow. That's okay, but Breaking Bad will be there because you talked about those episodes.
We never had we've first of all, that was on Gate Girl Soup. Doesn't count because it wasn't here. Yeah. Second of all, come on, what are you kidding me?
Okay.
I don't even count. I mean, that was anyway. All right. I was going to mention, I'll wait till next week's podcast to mention a few of the other series or episodes that just, I still will, because, on the next episode of this series, I'll actually reveal what 25 through 21 would have been, just so people know what just missed.
And what it would have been, meaning won't be or not.
Well, they're not going to get covered on a podcast other than me mentioning them.
Okay.
So these are the five that just missed. You know, so touch it.
Okay, got it. 25 through 21. Okay. Got it.
We're not, because I didn't want to do 25, the top 25, because then I'd be doing this until May. And then I kind of, another spoiler, I think I worked out the schedule right. So we'll be getting to number one pretty near within a week or so of my birthday. So it's kind of like a birthday present to myself.
Cool.
And I probably just gave away. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking about that. But what I do want to let people know, since we are at the getting near the end of the podcast here, I probably should give you guys a reason to listen to next week's greatest TV drama episodes of all time. So I will tell you what that episode and that series is going to be. Number 19 on the countdown. Believe it or not, it's going to be the season 4 finale of Dexter. Titled The Getaway. And believe me, if you had bet me at any point in time since this podcast started, you know, over 6.5 years ago, that we would ever have an episode devoted to Dexter, that wasn't going to be a raging, ranting, drunken, heat-filled hour of cursing and sneering, I would have taken that bet. But, gotta say, if it's a great, well, Jamie will be joining me for that podcast. She's a big Dexter fan. So, we will be extolling the virtues of that episode, even though, by the way, I will be shredding the rest of the show, like from post season 4, because, you know, it sucks after that.
Yeah.
And the fact that we then, within days of this, then they announced they're coming back to do another season of it, which is just insane timing. So,
yeah.
Providence and whatnot. So let me do the little wrap up here. And before we say our goodbyes, hey, kids out there, if you enjoyed this podcast, guess what? You'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. There you can like the page and join the conversation about shows such as The Greatest TV Dramas of All Time or the aforementioned Better Call Saul or Fargo or whatever heck you want to talk about. I don't care. Just talk, whatever. Hey, you can also go check out the Geek Girl Soup page since, you know, Kelly's here. I'll throw you some promotions here. Actually, I'll let you do that yourself. You want to, people.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So
it'll sound better coming at you.
On Facebook, we're at Geek Girl Soup. We have a page and a group. Come check out either. And to actually listen to the podcast, it's at geekgirlsoup.com. And right now we're podcasting weekly. Historically, we've picked a show or podcasted randomly. And starting Sunday, March 15th, we've been doing it weekly during the pandemic. We assign homework every week. And so
that's cool.
Every week now. Yep.
And as we mentioned, hinted at before, I am positive Kelly will return for at least one more of these. I don't know if there'll be anything more than that, but definitely one because, well, we already, that's not even a spoiler. We already know it's going to be the Leftovers and it's going to be Kelly. When the Leftovers is on this podcast, I'm not going to tell you guys when. Kelly's going to be here for that one.
Woohoo!
Might show up for another one. Don't know. I know one of the folks you've been podcasting a lot with over the course of this year. She is going to be lined up for a few as well. She's already signed up for one. We're talking about Court Robinson. She's already signed up for one. And I've already warned her that, oh, by the way, I already have another one that you are going to be doing. There's not going to be a question about you doing it with me. So too bad. that's not what he said. It's not that kind of a podcast. Anyway. So, back to my closing. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find our feed there, subscribe to it, and rate and review us there. You can just go to our podcast hosting page where you have 278 of our episodes there. It's the stvdpodcast.podbean.com. And of course, you can also follow us on Twitter. You never know. Occasionally, I accidentally tweet the wrong thing using the wrong account, and it could be something really scandalous. So that might be reason enough to follow us. It's at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in serious TV drama. So, Kelly, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast and also indulging me. I know I could be a bit of a blah, 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 but you know, it is what it is.
Nope. Thank you for having me. This has been awesome.
Awesome. Okay, so with that, thanks to you for joining me. Thanks to you guys for listening. And I will say goodnight myself. And Kelly, you can say goodnight to finish things up.
All right. Thank you all for listening. Talk to you again soon.